When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Analysing Anfield from the Liverpool Echo. I'm Beth Lindop, and just days on from Klopp's kids toppling Chelsea to help Liverpool win a record-extending 10th League Cup, I'm joined by one of the Echo's finest young guns, Kiefer MacDonald. How are we, Kiefer?
Very well. All the better for that introduction, and all the better for what happened at Wembley on Sunday, which I'm sure we'll get into. You know, plenty to discuss. Another amazing day under Jurgen Klopp, and as you say, it's just kind of beyond belief, isn't it, really, what happened?
Yeah, it was an amazing day. We were both there, and I know you, like myself, have been lucky enough the last few years to have experienced some incredible days following Liverpool, Champions League finals, winning the Premier League as well. But for me, that's got to be right up there on Sunday. The context of what Liverpool achieved with the amount of players they had out and the players that helped get them over the line, I mean, it was just a remarkable feat, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's only a handful of games that I think, you know, pick that, and it sounds weird, doesn't it? Because before the game, you're probably thinking, you know, at best Liverpool, you know, win by, you know, one or two goals, and it's just in the grand scheme of things, it's not a huge trophy. It's like a momentum builder. I always think with the League Cup, it's what you make it. I mean, if you invest so much in terms of what Liverpool have with like youngsters and stuff, it's really nice to get to the final and give, you know, youngsters and fringe players that moment and that like occasion at Wembley. But in the grand schemes of things, I think if you get knocked out in the quarterfinals or the semifinals, yeah, there's a bit of disappointment. But in the long term, no one's really too bothered, because, you know, normally you'd be going for Champions Leagues, Premier Leagues, FA Cups, whatever. But just the way it played out at Wembley on Sunday, I mean, everyone will obviously know what happened with, you know, the injuries and kind of what's been building for weeks now. It feels, I think it was 11 players were out before the final. Then obviously Gravenberch gets injured and the young kids come on. And as you say, Beth, it was just incredible. And I think, I mean, Klopp compared the game against Luton in midweek to Barcelona, which I thought was a bit of a stretch. But after this, I really do think that is up there with Barcelona in terms of its own context and its own circumstances. But I think the Barcelona game and probably just the Champions League final, given the magnitude of how big they were and what they allowed Liverpool to do the next season, I think they're the only two games of the Klopp era for me personally that I think probably challenged the League Cup. I mean, as I said, the circumstances are incredible. And, you know, James McConnell, Bobby Clark, and even Jadon Dance, how they all got stuck in and really played themselves into the occasion. And, you know, at best, I'm thinking just get it to extra time and kind of lose graciously, you know, lose by a goal. Mm. You know, Chelsea bring on another 50, 60 million pound striker. But as I say, the fact they grew into the game so well and they really got a hold of it. And then by the second half of extra time, they really did take the game to Chelsea. And they only really looked like one winner, didn't they, for the final 15 minutes. And obviously Virgil van Dijk, his first final as Liverpool captain, pops up, you know, after being denied earlier in the game with that header. He scores almost an identical goal. And yeah, it was just a really good afternoon, wasn't it?
It was. And going back then to the first half, because, you know, there was a lot of disappointment before kickoff. I'll include myself in that when I found out that none of the three injury doubts, Mohamed Salah, Dominic Szoboszlai and Darwin Nunez, were going to be involved. It did feel like it was going to be a really difficult afternoon, a real opportunity for Chelsea to get a little bit of momentum going under Maurizio Pochettino. But in spite of that, I thought Liverpool actually started really well. They started better than I expected them to. They had a couple of chances. Luis Diaz as well on that left flank seemed to really be going at Chelsea and had a couple of early opportunities. Were you surprised by how strongly Liverpool started in the context of how many players they had out injured?
I wasn't. I mean, I kind of just echo what you said. I mean, before the game, when they were reading out the 11 and the benches, me and my mate had a bit of a laugh because the numbers, it was like number 98, Trey Naomi, like, you know, number 73, 56, you know, 42. I mean, it must have been the highest, you know, shirt numbers tally for a bench in a cup final ever, not just in the League Cup. I mean, probably in any final, really. It was just incredible. And you almost kind of laugh to yourself. And the thing that I kind of earmarked before kickoff is I thought the 11 was strong enough. It was just that I think 9 of the 11 played against Luton in mid, well, started against Luton in midweek. It was only Robertson, wasn't it, and Canate who didn't. So I was kind of worried about that. And I just thought if they didn't get a goal before 70 minutes, I thought that's when Chelsea would, you know, really kind of not flex their muscle, because I don't think they've got too many great players. I mean, you look at some of the transfer fees that have been kind of thrown around for some of those players, and, you know, they're not great, are they? Mm-hmm. It's just kind of the experience that they have. Even players like Maduake, who, you know, haven't really kicked on at Chelsea, but they've, you know, got experience of playing European football and Premier League games, which Liverpool didn't really have on the bench apart from Costa Simicas and Joe Gomez. But yeah, I mean, it was kind of, as I said, the first 70 minutes, I didn't get a goal. I did worry. But as you said, they started really well, and Diaz was, it was a weird one, because I thought he had such a good afternoon in terms of his effort, and I don't think he could fault him, but his decision making at times was quite bad. And I mean, he tees up the chance for Cody Gakpo. I think he plays it back to Robertson, he puts the cross in, and that kind of came through Diaz, you know, running at Gusto on the right. But I think in general, those times where he could have maybe cut inside more, or he could have taken less touches and played the ball quicker on the overlap or whatnot. But for whatever reason, whether it was, you know, I don't know if he was tired from Wednesday night or what, or whether it was just, I don't know, it felt like he was playing very within himself. And I think for the first half of the season, that was kind of a regular theme. You know, he's still getting back up to speed after that injury last year. But I thought after that Newcastle game on New Year's Day, he really kicked on and kind of looked like the Luis Diaz 2 years ago, you know, where he's just electric and he can beat a man. I always remember the League Cup final against Chelsea in 2022, where, I mean, he had Reece James on toes for the full 120 minutes, whatever it was. And it kind of felt like we were going back to that, but I think on Sunday he did struggle, and I'm not sure why. But he's another one, you can't fault his effort at all. But yeah, Liverpool did really, you know, I think had the better of the ball, but I think that injury just kind of, Chelsea grew in confidence, because they were probably looking at Liverpool's bench and thinking, you know, if they make changes, which they're going to have to, because it's going to be an intense game, then they haven't really got options. But, you know, we'll get onto the second half shortly, but, you know, Chelsea didn't really go for the jugular, did they? They kind of missed the opportunity, and as I say, Liverpool's kids, you know, Bobby Clark, McConnell and all the rest, Jadon Dans, Kwanzaa, they already grew in confidence.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that injury to Ryan Gravenberch really sort of shifted momentum into Chelsea's favour, and I think that was one of the strongest spells they had in the match after he went off on a stretcher. Now, Jurgen Klopp did a press conference this afternoon. He said that he's got some ankle ligament damage, not as bad as first feared, perhaps not as bad as it could have been, but he is out for at least the next two games, which is not what Liverpool need at the moment, considering the other absentees they've got. It was interesting, wasn't it? Because in the moment, I actually didn't see the tackle from Moises Caicedo, but watching it back, it was quite a nasty one. Whether it was intentional, whether it was not intentional, I think the reasoning as to why VAR didn't intervene was because it was an accident. His foot slipped. I suppose Liverpool fans might argue that Curtis Jones against Tottenham, his foot slipped over the top of the ball. There was no malicious intent in that either, and that was punished. Do you think that is... Were you surprised to see that go unpunished? That challenge?
Yeah, I mean, I think those two, wasn't there? I think, I think Diaz went down as well. Someone that went down just after Gravenberch, and then I think that's what eventually kind of stopped the game. But, I mean, it's one of those at the time. I mean, I was in the top tier, so it was, you know, quite difficult to see exactly how bad it was. But I think at half time, you know, people start seeing it on the screens and on the phones and stuff, you kind of get word of it. And Curtis Jones comparison comes up straight away. And I think that's happened a few times this season where there have been reckless challenges. I mean, there was one in the United game against Fulham, Maguire, kind of similar, where he's lunging for the ball and he's, you know, overstretched and he's high and he's reckless. And, you know, for whatever reasons, the referees don't intervene. And I mean, not to bring it back all the way to September and that defeat to Tottenham, but that was a moment that could potentially end up costing Liverpool the title. And it felt like if Chelsea had gone down to 10 men, I think Liverpool would have really gone for it then, because they probably knew their best chance was within 90 minutes. And yeah, I think it would have completely changed the game. But I mean, Chelsea did have a few chances, didn't they, Beth? I mean, Palmer had that chance from close range, and then it was a superb save from Cleveland Keller, who stepped up again in a cup final. Endo as well. I mean, it was a great bot to deny Jackson after that. I mean, just on Keller, I mean, prior to Christmas, I was a bit unsure about him. He played in a few of the Europa League games. It's the most he's ever played in a season for Liverpool, but I don't think his performances were necessarily up there with what they had been when he'd been, you know, dropped in a few years ago here and there on the cup runs. Certainly, I remember the 4-3 win against Fulham. He was, you know, questionable for a few goals from set pieces. He maybe didn't command his area as well as he should have. But I mean, you know, with this young lad, whenever the light shine the brightest, he kind of always steps up, doesn't he? He was just brilliant, wasn't he?
He was. He loves this competition, doesn't he? Which is
we all do.
Yeah, we all do. The best competition in club football. But yeah, he was brilliant, and I think he has had a fair bit of criticism, hasn't he? These last couple of months, and even against Luton for Luton's goal, you know, he did get a little bit of flack for that one. Probably some of it is quite unfair, because I think as a goalkeeper, that must be one of the most difficult positions to come into the team when you've not been playing. You know, in any other position, you maybe are afforded a little bit more time to sort of play yourself into the game and get used to the rhythm of playing in the team. Whereas a goalkeeper, you sort of thrust straight in there, and any mistake you make is likely to have pretty disastrous repercussions. And I think it's no coincidence that his performances have improved since he's got a little bit of consistency and he's had a little run in the team. And that's really heartening for Liverpool, especially considering it looks like Alisson Becker's going to be out until at least the end of February. But just looking at some of his stats, because it was 2.95 goals prevented, which is an incredible amount, one of the highest, I think, on record, it was saying on Monday Night Football, on Monday. So incredible from him, 9 saves across the whole game. And it is really reassuring, isn't it, for Liverpool going forward now that they know they've got a goalkeeper between the sticks who's playing with a little bit of confidence?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the games that are coming up. I mean, obviously they've got the FA Cup game tomorrow. I mean, whether he will play in that, I'm not sure. They might throw Adrian into that just to kind of minimise the risk of anyone getting injured. I mean, the way it's going at the minute, they're dropping like flies. But then you've got the game against Forest, you've got then the Europa League game, which again, Adrian could play. And then it's all kind of, I think everyone circled that date with Man City on the 10th of March, which is, you know, one of those where it has done in recent seasons, going to decide where the title goes. So, you know, to have your goalkeeper not only, you know, being called into action as he was at Wembley and being able, you know, being equal to it, but I also think his distribution, which I think that's always kind of been one of his strong points, Kelleher, and what's kind of always pleased Klopp, hasn't it? The way that he can, you know, Alisson is one of the best in the world and his distribution is brilliant. But, you know, to have a number two, as you say, who can almost, you'd have to change your style of play at all. If your centre back or, you know, Van Dijk or Canate or whatever, you've got complete trust. You'd have to change your game at all. You know, you're not taking goal kicks. You're not moving, I don't know, 20 yards up the field, whatever. You can play out from the back with confidence. And obviously we'll get into extra time shortly, but for the passage of play that resulted in the corners for Van Dijk's goal at the start of that, I mean, he plays the ball through two Chelsea attackers and Endo gets it on the half turn and Liverpool are away. And as I say, eventually it kind of leads to Liverpool's goal. I mean, if that's another goalkeeper, does he punt it up the field? Does he waste time? Does he think, look, we'll just get to penalties now? But it's that kind of proactive nature. They're not being reactionary, are they? They're kind of, you know, got that belief, which is what kind of Jurgen Klopp's whole 9 years in charge have kind of really, you know, sent through the club, haven't they? It's been that kind of reoccurring theme to beat the odds, you know, whether it be Champions League semi-finals against Barcelona, to go and win the Premier League, to go and win League Cups, FA Cups, to, you know, even to beat Everton a few years, you know, sorry, Ian, our presenter there. But, they kind of did similar with so many academy kids out on that afternoon. So, you know, it just kind of shows that kind of style of play, but that also that belief just runs through the club. And just going on to Kelleher as well, I mean, in the second half, I think it was Chelsea's XG, I mean, it kind of dwarfed Liverpool's. It was 1.56, and obviously the big one, the big chunk of that, I'd imagine, was Conor Gallagher's one-on-one, you know, late on.
It was very Alisson-esque save, that, wasn't it? Coming out, making yourself big.
It was huge, wasn't he? Yeah. I mean, he's a big lad anyway, you know, and he has kind of beefed up a bit in recent years. But yeah, I mean, to come out so quick as well, he wasn't like he was hanging around on his line. He kind of saw that pass from Palmer come in, and then he kind of almost makes Gallagher's mind up for him. He probably wants a bit of time to get the ball out of his feet and maybe, you know, take a second touch and wrap it around the goalkeeper. But, you know, Kelleher's at his feet and he smothers him. And yeah, it was just unbelievable. And it's so nice that he's had those moments, because, you know, 2 years ago, you obviously played the League Cup final and obviously, you know, scores the penalty, and then, you know, Kepa skies his and Kelleher gets the claims, and then, you know, myself included, maybe thought it was time for Liverpool to cash in on him. It's not going to get any better than that. He's not going to have another final like that. And okay, it wasn't as, you know, as, you know, those other people he shared the stage with on Sunday, but it was just as heroic. He more than played his part, as so many of them did.
Yeah, definitely.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Another player who I thought was interesting on Sunday was Connor Bradley, because he's earned so many plaudits, and rightly so, over the last couple of months. He was playing in a little bit of a more unfamiliar role, wasn't he, when Ryan Gravenberch goes off. Initially, he goes forward into midfield. Joe Gomez comes on at right back. And you could see he was sort of not struggling necessarily, but he wasn't impacting the game in the way that we've become accustomed to him doing out on the flank. And within sort of 10, 15 minutes, you know, whether that was something that he'd done naturally or whether it had come from the manager, he sort of moved on to the right wing, didn't he? And Elliot comes inside a little bit more into the midfield. What did you make of that, and how Bradley did it in that game and sort of coped with all of the positional changes?
I mean, it was just brilliant, wasn't it? And it was quite funny enough, because I wrote something last week, I spoke to Barry Lutis, Liverpool under-21s manager, who was, you know, formerly the under-18s manager in Connor's first season at the club. And I also spoke to one of the elite performance directors at the Irish FA, and he told a tale, actually, of when they won the Victory Shield in 2018. It would have been the under-16s, and Connor Bradley was the captain. And he basically said for that tournament, so it was Northern Ireland, Wales, England, Republic of Ireland. And he basically said for that tournament, you know, Connor was playing right wing, and he kind of always had done, because he was the best player. And, you know, you kind of hear tales like that, don't you, with a lot of players. They normally start off as a striker, score loads of goals, they're the best player for their county team, their school team, whatever. And then eventually they kind of move back and back. I mean, I think even Kelleher said in the past that he was a striker at some point. But with Connor, this fellow was telling me that... that used to play on the right wing, and they only kind of moved into right back in the final of this competition because another lad got sent off, and, you know, they kind of just wanted to be a bit more compact and whatever. And we were just chatting, and I mean, I couldn't really believe it, because I was like, he's not a player who's got that silk of a right wing. Mm-hmm. He's got a brilliant touch, but in terms of, like, you couldn't imagine him, you know, cutting inside and curling one with his left foot or whatever. But I think he's so raw, and he's just so impressive. And I think that's what's the beauty of him and Trent is that, you know, Trent technically is so polished, and he's really nice on the eye. I mean, some of the daisy cutter passes he does, it, you know, to switch the play are amazing. And, you know, there's only a handful of players in world football who can do that. But then on the other side, I think, you know, Connor Bradley's so raw. He's quite scrappy. You know, he's just relentless, isn't he? And Barry Lewis just kind of said something similar. He said, I think the reason Liverpool fans have bought into him, you know, apart from being an amazing player and having such a good start to his career, is because I think when you watch him on the pitch, you kind of say, well, that's how I would play. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe not the most polished, but you'd give 110%. You'd run up and down each time. You know, you just kind of die for the badge. And, you know, it's easier to say when you're sitting in the cop that, oh, you know, you'd give an extra 5 or 10%. But he really plays like someone who has done that. And as you say, I was really impressive how he kind of got himself back involved in the game on the right. And he, you know, he gave Chilwell I mean, they both got booked for that scrap early on, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, looking back, he did absolutely nothing wrong, Connor Bradley, didn't he? He did very well not to respond. But I suppose that's one of those rules that is upheld quite a lot in football, isn't it? It's sort of both players who are mainly involved in those disputes do get booked. But yeah, I thought he was very unlucky there.
And he was just relentless, wasn't he, really? And he kind of, as I say, Diaz was, his effort on the other side was brilliant, and Connor kind of matched that on the right-hand side. And, you know, Gusto and Chilwell, either, you know, right back and left back, they had a really torrid afternoon. And I think Chilwell got, you know, taken off in extra time. And I mean, it says a lot to kind of take off your captain for the afternoon, and that's probably because Connor Bradley, you know, for 75-80 minutes gave him a really torrid afternoon. And then that allows the other lads who are coming on, whether that be, you know, Bobby Clark, James McConnell, Jadon Danz, that allows them to kind of build on that. And, you know, when they're fresh legs and maybe they haven't got the technical ability that you know, a seasoned pro would have, you know, if you did have a Salah or a Szoboszlai or whatever, but, you know, if they're just running full of energy, which they were when they came on, it kind of makes it really difficult for those fullbacks. So, you know, full credit to Connor Bradley. And, you know, after the last couple of weeks that he's had, you know, off the field, and you know, it was just really nice to kind of see him have that moment, which is, as I say, it's another thing about the League Cup. It's what you make it. And there's so many great stories in this Liverpool team at the moment. You know, you go right the way from the goalkeeper to, you know, to Conor Bradley to the young lads coming through. It was just, I think that's what made it. It kind of built into that narrative that it was, you know, such a remarkable victory for Liverpool.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that versatility that Conor Bradley has now, that ability to play on the wing when required, of entering into midfield, that's crucial to Liverpool, particularly in light of all the injuries that they've got. Another player that I want to mention, in fact, I could probably do a whole podcast just on him, because he's been an absolute revelation. I think you're going to guess the wrong player, but go on, who do you think I'm going to say?
I feel like you're going to say Alexis McAllister, but you're going to say Wataru Endo.
I am indeed, yeah. I mean, Alexis McAllister, we'll reserve that for another day because I don't think we've got enough time to get into how much I love Alexis McAllister. But Wataru Endo, I mean, I was reading some newspapers on Monday morning and reading some player ratings, not Ian Doyle's player ratings, I must add. I think he gave Endo a 9. But there was one in a national newspaper that gave him a 6. And the comment that they put alongside it was he was found wanting at times. I mean, I just can't see that. Obviously, player ratings are actually a very difficult task. I think everyone thinks that they could do better and everyone likes to disagree. But in the heat of the moment, sometimes you can find it quite difficult to ensure that every player is given the correct score. But just looking at some of his stats from that game, so 91% pass accuracy, 89 touches, 8 passes into the final third, 2 accurate long balls, 4 out of 6 tackles won, 12 out of 19 duels won. I mean, he's just an absolute warrior. And I think what epitomises him was, you know, at the full-time whistle, I think Jurgen Klopp said he couldn't walk. He was that stiff, obviously.
I don't think I could walk, to be
honest. I know. Our colleague, Paul Gorse, reported that he was leaving the stadium on crutches and in a protective boot. Jurgen Klopp said in his pre-Southampton press conference that he's potentially, you know, he's being monitored. He took a real knock in that game, I think, from Moises Caicedo as well. But he is just an absolute superstar, isn't he?
Absolutely. And I'd like to go on record actually for the first time and hold my hands up and apologise, because I think I actually said it to you, Beth, before Christmas, that I just wasn't buying into him. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, you know, because of a lack of effort or anything at all. It was just I felt that he was kind of miles off the pace. You know, when you look at who Liverpool were linked with last summer in that defensive midfield position and who they were trying to replace. And even if you look at someone like Jordan Henderson and kind of the experience that he's accumulated over his, you know, Liverpool career, you're talking about Champions League, a Premier League winning captain. You're then talking about Fabinho, who came in and was probably like the last slam dunk signing of the Klopp era that allowed them to go on and you know, be successful in the Champions League and kind of go on better. And then you had this lad coming in from Stuttgart in the Bundesliga at the age of 30, 31. He'd never played in European competition at all. No one had ever heard of him. He wasn't like a player you had heard of in the top leagues. It was only kind of the stats gurus in the Bundesliga who were saying, you know, he could be quite good. But and it was a bit of a slow burner, wasn't it? He made his name in those Europa League group games. And I think after Alexis McAllister got injured against Sheffield United in early December, and then they had the games against Arsenal and Old Man United and then Arsenal. I think since then he's just kind of really grown in belief, hasn't he? And you can see that the players around him are really starting to trust him. As I say, there was the moment just before the goal in the corner. I mean, Endo gets it. As I say, there's two Chelsea strikers and you know, Van Dijk and Canato, Van Dijk and Quansah pull them either side and Endo receives a ball on the half turn, he's away. And that's another thing that I think he's really improved upon. I don't think anyone can question his love for a tackle beforehand, but his ability on the ball and his composure on the ball and kind of speeding up his play. Mm-hmm. And we've heard, you know, Klopp talk about that with Curtis Jones in recent years, but, you know, for someone at the age of 31 to be kind of changing how they've played completely, I mean, now he gets the ball out of his feet and immediately he's looking left and right. He's, you know, where's Luis Diaz? Where's Harvey Elliott? Mm-hmm. And that was really key to Liverpool getting on top of Chelsea, I thought, in that second half of extra time, because it would have been so easy for them to think, actually, our best bet here is probably penalties. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to, you know, as I say, they brought on Maduake, you know, they had Cole Palmer. There's so many players who could catch Liverpool out on the break. They had that scare with Conor Gallagher later on in normal time when he nearly scored. But Endo was kind of the driving force behind that. I was like, no, look, we're going to play. We're going to, you know, really trust these young lads. And as I say, you look at midfield with James McCollum and Bobby Clark, and I mean, he was just kind of that reassuring base to say, go on, lads. You know, he was like a proud dad, wasn't he? He was like, go on, lads, go and do your thing. I'll kind of sit here and cover all this. You just go and, you know, make that difference in the final third. And I mean, what a turnaround. Again, we go back to narratives and the League Cup and stuff. It really is what you make it. And I think another story is Endo, isn't it? As I say, you could probably go through the whole team and pick out a story for each individual, but he's another one who, you know, you when he was going to the Asia Games last month, everyone was like, oh, we are going to miss him. And he's come back and, you know, he's played an awful lot of football, but he's come back and he's really looking now like he can spearhead or certainly help Liverpool if they are going to be successful in these final few months.
Yeah, I think it's really important as well, like you say, to highlight how good he can be on the ball, because I think we sometimes maybe do him a disservice by talking about how he does the simple things well and how he's a good tackler, which he is, and it's important to mention that. But also I think his quality, his ability to pick a pass is something that's really surprised me, and it is a reason why he's become such an integral part of this Liverpool side. And I think only for the fact that Alexis McAllister comes in for, you know, a relatively modest fee in modern football terms, and it has been as brilliant as he has done, I think only he can pip him to signing of the season for Liverpool for me. I suppose the one negative from Endo's point of view from that performance on Sunday was that he inadvertently causes Virgil van Dijk's goal to be chalked off in the second half.
Very harsh.
I mean, in the moment. I had absolutely no idea what had happened. Obviously, go back and watch why that goal was ruled out, and it was because Endo had been in an offside position blocking or allegedly blocking Levi Colwill from getting to Virgil van Dijk. I mean, obviously we're biased, we're looking at it from a Liverpool perspective, but I just don't think that for the sake of modern football you want goals like that to be ruled out.
No, not in a cup final. I mean, that probably highlights that's probably the biggest one that there probably has been over the last few years. I mean, you get them, you know, in the league games, the cup games, whatever, and you can kind of take it on the chin and think, well, you might get that back over the course of a, you know, a 38-game season or whatever. But in a cup final like that, when, you know, everyone's celebrating as pandemonium, and then all of a sudden you've got, you know, some fella drawing a little TV with his hands and he goes over to the monitor, and then, I mean, it's not even like the Chelsea players appealed for it at all, and there was, you know, kind of any protest really. It was kind of one of them, and then as soon as, you know, it comes up on the screen, VAR check in progress, and the Chelsea players, Chilwell, they're all over to the ref saying, hang on, I don't even think they know what they were appealing for. But as you say, it was really harsh. I think the ball had gone over Colwell's head, and I don't think there was any chance he was getting to that. But I just look at it from the point of view of, you know, Chris Kavanagh. He's probably thinking, you know, it's probably not going to be a high-scoring game between Liverpool and Chelsea. It was obviously, you know, midway through the second half. You probably don't want a cup final to be decided on a contentious goal like that. And I think that probably sums up the state of modern-day football, doesn't it? That, you know, referees are kind of over-scrutinising everything to kind of think of the repercussions after it. But as I say, it was, again, so fitting that Van Dijk was the man to pop up and score the winner, you know, half an hour later or so.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it comes back to that idea of VAR's not been brought in to re-referee games. And that was, I think, a re-refereeing of the game.
I think referees know now that they almost have a safety blanket of, they don't have to make the big calls anymore. I mean, for instance, to take it back, I mean, Sterling's goal, I mean, it's a brilliant call from the linesman. Mm-hmm. To, you know, he flags, doesn't he, as soon as Sterling puts it in the back of the net for Jackson being offside. And that's one of them where you think, you know, on the big stage at Wembley, he's really, you know, kind of put his neck on the line there and he's got the call right. I mean, at the time, I didn't think it was offside, but you see it back and it's, you know, but he is offside by the laws of the game. And that's what you want. You want referees to stand, you know, to stand tall and make these decisions. But one, I suppose, when it's, you know, when they've got this safety net of VAR, they are going to let it go and then let the VAR do the re-refereeing for them.
Yeah, and as you say, some moral justice was served with Virgil van Dijk scoring the winner deep into added time. I mean, I've seen Virgil deliver some incredible performances for Liverpool over the years. I'm not quite sure any of them stand out to me as much as that one on Sunday. It was the epitome of a captain's performance. Again, 91% pass accuracy, two chances created, a goal, three tackles won, three out of three ground duels won, four out of seven aerial duels won, two interceptions, seven clearances. Just a phenomenal performance. And I think my favourite stat to come from the game on Sunday was that it means that Virgil van Dijk has now scored in 21 games for Liverpool, and they've won every single time that he's scored. It's the most games a player has ever scored for Liverpool while winning 100% while scoring in games. So incredible sort of example of him taking a game by the scruff of the neck and leading by example. What did you make of his performance?
I mean, he was colossus, wasn't he? I mean, I saw someone after the game, I think it might have been Chris Basker in front of Telegraph, he said it was the best captain's performance for Liverpool in a final since, you know, 2005. I think he may be doing Gerrard against West Ham a year later, a bit of a disservice there, but I mean, it was one of the all-time great performances from a Liverpool captain. I mean, he just, especially, again, it's the context of it all, isn't it, in terms of they had so many young lads around them. So you had you needed the big players, the leaders to step up, and no one kind of did that more than Van Dijk. And especially towards the end of, or in early extra time, Konate had been booked. I think McConnell had been booked in front of him as well shortly after. So, you know, Chelsea are playing on the break. You've got a really attack-minded young side out there. You've got, you know, Endo, who's absolutely run himself into the ground. You've got a young Gerard Quansah next year. You've got a Kostas Tsimikas who loves to go forward. And you're just holding the fort again, just saying, bring it on, lads, out. You know, I'll deal with everything. And he just absolutely, you know, whether it was in the air, whether it was on the floor, whether it was a ground duel, whatever, he absolutely just ate everything up. And Chelsea couldn't get any change out of him all afternoon. I mean, everything that came into him, he just dealt with. It was, I mean, people are saying that he's back to his best, and, you know, pre-injury, I wouldn't go as say as that far, because I think pre-injury, I don't think anyone probably in the Premier League era for you know, a couple of seasons is getting near the levels that he set. And I think 21, 22, I think people forget how good he was. And I think last season we probably saw an effect of he played so many games after returning from injury. Yeah, I mean, Liverpool played 63 in all competitions, which is the most he'd ever played. And I'd probably, you know, have a guess that Van Dijk probably started, you know, 40, 48, 49, 50 of those. And that probably, as I say, had a knock-on effect last year of why he kind of looked so lethargic, and he just wasn't engaging in tackles the same way. I don't think his body language was right. And you know, you tie that in with the midfield that was in front of him. They clearly weren't right either. You know, there wasn't a great deal of legs there. Henderson, Fabinho struggled as well. There was chopping and changing. Those young lads have been brought in. But this season, I mean, taking the mantle on of being Liverpool captain, he's done... I mean, you can't really put it into words. You can't really quantify it, because it's a thing that you can't quantify that he's done so well at, you know, making others around him feel so comfortable and kind of elevating everyone's game. I mean, not to do anyone else, you know, put a slight on anyone else, but I don't think the rest of the team and the young lads would have performed like that if they didn't have a Van Dijk kind of, you know, shepherding them through that game the other day. And as I say, when we look back at it at the end of the season, you know, I'm sure this game, as it was a few years ago, will be one of, well, they've got a trophy in the bag for the end of February, for the start of spring kind of thing. This could lead on to great, you know, bigger and better things. And, you know, you imagine if Liverpool are going to win the Premier League, Van Dijk's going to be key to that between now and the end of the season. If they are going to win the Europa League and the FA Cup, you know, Van Dijk will be key to that. I mean, I just struggle to think of a better individual performance. I'm just trying to rack my brains. I mean, the obvious ones of Thiago against United. Aren't they?
Sorry, I knew you were going to get Thiago in there.
But that was one of my favourite performances ever from a Liverpool player. If you go further, but you've got Suarez against Norwich. I mean, take your pick of any of the seasons.
Salah at Old Trafford.
Yeah, there's so many big performances, but that will be one that kind of, you know, it's kind of season defining that, because what it could lead to. I'm sure you agree, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully that's not the last trophy he's going to lift for Liverpool this season. But yeah, just totally imperious, and I think him being on the pitch enabled Liverpool, as you say, empowered those younger players to be able to attack with a confidence and a conviction that Chelsea was sorely lacking. And I think, you know, maybe his form, his dip in form last season was symptomatic of the fact he was playing in a Liverpool side that were really lacking confidence. And I think now this Liverpool team is the complete opposite of that. I think they feel that any player who's on the pitch can go out and win them a game. And I think that's so crucial. There has been plenty of discourse over the past few days over, you know, I think it was Gary Neville, wasn't it, on Sky Sports, who came out with what I imagine might be an infamous line of Klopp's kids versus the blue £1 billion bottle jobs. It's been labelled as being
it's a great line.
It is a great line. Definitely not off the cuff. He's had that one written down for some time. But, you know, Maurizio Pochettino said it was quite unfair. I think quite a few people have said it was quite a harsh way of analysing Chelsea's performance. And the cynics have been very quick to point out that Chelsea's average age in the starting 11 and at the end of the match as well was younger than Liverpool's. Chelsea started the match with a starting 11 with an average age of 23.9 years. They ended the match with an average age of 22.6 years. Liverpool, by comparison, started with a starting 11 age with an average age of 25.8 years and ended the match with an average age of 24.1. So, you know, the stats obviously don't lie. They did have a younger squad.
It's the context of that.
But it's the context. And I think that's why that's such a poor way, really, of assessing those two sides, because yes, Chelsea had a lot of young players, but those are young players that have been brought in for big fees, that have been brought in because of their proven at, you know, at a high level across Europe.
Yeah.
Whereas a number of Liverpool's players hadn't made the senior debut for the club until this season, which is what makes what they did so remarkable. And I think the vast majority of fans, even Chelsea fans, would have to concede that, you know, the inexperience that Liverpool had makes that win even more impressive. But I think it does go back to the whole, you know, the leadership that Van Dijk brings, that Endo brings, because I think Chelsea's biggest issue is they've spent a lot of money on players who have the potential to be world-class one day, but they're not supported by a spine of players who already have that quality and experience. And I think that was the real difference between the two teams.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just to kind of pick up on your point there.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
The key kind of comparison, if you like, is kind of gusto. You know, Chelsea's right back and Conor Bradley. I mean, they're both the same age, both 20 years old, but, you know, Gusto cost Chelsea $30 million from Lyon, and I think he'd already played 50 games for them before moving to Chelsea. Meanwhile, Conor Bradley spent last year at League One. The season before that, he was, you know, playing in the UEFA Youth League, the FA Youth Cup, you know, the Premier League too. And, you know, he's played less than 15 games for Liverpool. Yeah, he's had international recognition with Northern Ireland, but it's a completely different kind of kettle of fish to what Gusto's been used to, you know, not only this season, but prior to Chelsea. You know, Caicedo's another one, you know, 21 years old, and, I mean, that's a younger age than when Gerrard established himself at Liverpool, but this is a player who's played at Brighton for 2.5 years. He's got Premier League experience. He's the most expensive signing in Premier League history. So yeah, on the face of it, he might be younger or the same age as a Ryan Gravenberch, but clearly experience levels there are just worlds apart. I think it will be a fair assessment of Chelsea, to be fair, because, you know, there are some good talented players in that side. I mean, you look at Conor Gallagher, who's had a good season. You look at Cole Palmer, who's done really well. But it just feels like very much they have, you know, kind of square pegs and round holes, and they've almost bought individuals. And I'm not really sure what they're striving to achieve at Chelsea. And I mean, I do feel sorry for Pochettino, because it feels like he wins a few games. I mean, last month they got battered at Anfield 4-1. They then lose to Chelsea. Lose to Wolves 4-2. Then they have a decent result at Palace. Then they have another decent result against Man City. And then all of a sudden, it's kind of like three steps back, and they're back to square one. So I do feel sorry for Pochettino in that sense. I don't think it's an indictment of him as a manager. I think it's more Chelsea as a club and the position they find themselves in. Because, I mean, you look at, you know, I mean, just got their starting 11 up now. I mean, I'm not sure how many of those players will be there in 3 years' time. I mean, Colwell, yeah, probably. Caicedo, Fernandez, they'll stick with them. Sterling won't be there. Conor Gallagher could go in the summer. Cole Palmer, I mean, you'd imagine he'd be there, but would he jump at the chance to move if something bigger and better came up? Nicholas Jackson, there's so many unproven players that, I mean, it's not like the players who've come through the academy and you can maybe bide your time with them. They're 40, 50 million quid players. You know, I mean, you've got Mudrick coming off the bench who costs £80 million, which is just absolutely mental. And yeah, you know, he's got a bit of pace about him, but, you know, an £80 million, you know, player, you know, like Van Dijk was for Liverpool, he wins you the cup final. Mm-hmm. You've got Mudrick coming off the bench. I mean, that's just the difference of where the two clubs are at the moment. And, you know, even with, as I say, the youngsters who came on, Bobby Clark, who, again, he's only really kind of got his teeth stuck into the first team, you know, from last month. Same with Conor Bradley. James McConnell, he's only had a few games. Jadon Dans made his debut 4 days earlier. But they were just able to kind of, you know, rallied by Van Dijk, rallied by Endo, McAllister, all those players. They were able to go one better and say, you know, this is what we're about. They stood tall and puffed their chests out, and, you know, they got exactly what they deserve.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned James McConnell there, and he was someone who really did impress me coming on in extra time. I mean, just looking at some of his stats and how he ranks amongst all the substitutes that came on against Chelsea. So he was first for the amount of passes, first for the amount of final third passes, second in terms of passing accuracy, second in terms of touches as well. So incredible. And again, shows that these young players are coming on and they feel empowered to be able to be brave on the ball, and they're not just passing it backwards or shying away or hoping they don't make a mistake. They come on and they're not afraid to try and impact the game. And I think you mentioned it earlier in the build up to Van Dijk's goal. The corner is obviously won by Bobby Clark, wins that corner, and Jadon Dans and James McConnell involved in the build up as well. That's really heartening. That must be really heartening for Jurgen Klopp to see that those young players, they're not just coming on and making up the numbers. They're really contributing to what Liverpool are doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I put something on Twitter yesterday, which, I mean, from the outside in, you know, you look at it and you think James McConnell, Bobby Clark and Jadon Dans are kind of the main figureheads of that side, on the kind of the academy figureheads. You know, they've only kind of made their debuts in, you know, recent, or had a prolonged spell in the first team in recent weeks. And, you know, people on the outside might look at it and think, well, it was just a lucky roll of the dice from Liverpool. But, I mean, Klopp's, I mean, Bobby Clark is dad Lee did an interview with TalkSport this morning, and where he said, he moved into the first team changing room 6 months ago, which it just shows that all this has been planned. And yes, Liverpool would never have planned for them all to kind of play such a huge part in the final, because if Liverpool have even half of the kind of injured players they had, I don't think they would have had much game time on Sunday. But those kind of foundations have been laid in place over, not only this year, but over the last 9 years since Klopp's been here, where young players are able to step up. You go all the way back to 2015, you look at players that come through, Pedro Trevea, and especially now, like more recently, you've had like Curtis Jones, Trent Alexander-Arnold, and they've kind of all taken that path steadily, and then they've all gone on to become really big players for Liverpool. And as I say, it's a credit to Klopp to not only the kind of how welcoming he's been and the belief, but also the environment he's created that these players are able to just go out there and play their normal game. I mean, I think McConnell, I remember his first touch on the halfway line. I think he had two Chelsea players breathing down his neck, and he takes a really heavy touch. And I remember there was a few people behind me, was like, oh. And then after that, you're thinking, next time he gets the ball. But he kind of just built on, kind of grew and grew and grew. And as I say, for the corner they win, Carragher did some brilliant analysis on it last night on Monday Night Football, and I think Dan's kind of scoops the ball around the corner, it comes into McConnell, and then Clark's kind of lurking in that kind of left sided half space, and he's pointing to his right foot where he wants the ball to take it on the inside, and I mean it's just brilliant. And I think Carragher, it was an indictment of Chelsea said that Liverpool were able to get comfortable with the youngsters. Someone probably should have gone through the back of them. I mean, but the fact they kind of grew into the game, and McConnell makes that challenge, doesn't he, in the second half extra time, the professional foul, which I think deserves a statue in itself outside the club, how kind of instrumental it was. I mean, I remember last year when they played Real Madrid, and I think it was for the fourth or fifth goal, whatever it was, and I think Modric, a 37-year-old Luka Modric, was running with the ball, and you had like Besetic, Fabinho, and whoever out chasing him, and everyone was just screaming, like, yank him down, pull him down. And no one kind of had that kind of now, so wanted to take one. But, McConnell comes on yesterday at Wembley Stadium, and, he's running towards his own goal, and he just kind of took someone back. And as I say, that just kind of sums up how confident they are and ready to play that part. So, it's a massive credit not only to them, but, Klopp. And it kind of, it feels like if this is the last trophy they win of the Klopp reign, it's very suitable, I think, isn't it? Very fitting.
Yeah, I think one thing that's really important, because the club deserves an enormous amount of credit for what they've done and that pathway from the academy up to the first team. Jürgen Klopp is obviously leaving, but it's not just him, it's his backroom staff as well. We know Pep Linders has been very vocal in terms of integrating those young players into the first team environment, but also Vita Matos as well, the club's elite development coach. That's going to be a huge blow, isn't it? There's probably some of those players in the academy that are worrying maybe a little bit for the future, thinking, we hope someone comes in and trusts us as much as this current crop of manager and backroom staff do.
Yeah, absolutely. But I suppose that the reassuring thing is that, the lads who are coming through now, and there's plenty more to come. You've got the likes of Kieran Morrison, Trent Koné-Doherty, you've got Josh Davidson, you've got loads of young players coming through, and the ones who have already made the step up, as I say, whether you go back to as far back as Trent Alexander-Arnold, Curtis Jones, the lads coming through now, no one's disappointed, no one's let Liverpool down. And that was kind of my only one worry on Sunday. If it went to penalties, I mean, penalties is an absolute lottery anyway, but you just didn't want it to fall on one.
Yeah, you would have felt for one of those young players if they'd have cost Liverpool the trophy.
Because then you feel like even though Klopp would have, fronted it and said, it's not his fault or whatever, whoever missed it, but you think deep down that might have, might have set them back a bit. And, how do you deal with that as a young lad to kind of prepare with that? But as I say, in terms of, players coming through the academy, I mean, that was what, as I say, when I spoke to Barry Lutis last week, I said to him, he must be immensely proud of, so many of his players have come through and, earned, 50, 60 appearances for Liverpool. But he was kind of quick to kind of put the praise on, Pep Linders for acting as well as like Vito Matos as a link between the academy and the first team, and kind of keeping on top and informing Klopp who's kind of ready to make the jump. And yeah, it really is incredible a position that Liverpool are in, because it's kind of sad on one hand that Klopp's going to be leaving and all the memories that we've kind of enjoyed over the last 9 years, but at the same time I think it's really exciting. And I think if you can get a young manager in, whether that be Xabi Alonso or Ruben Amiron, I mean, they're going to be licking their lips, aren't they, and rubbing their hands at the thought of managing some of these players for the next 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years. Because, as I say, you've got a spine there, essentially. I mean, you look at Konate, still young. You've got the likes of Gravenberch, McAllister. You've got, Elliot, You know, just so many young players. Then you throw the lads in, Kwanzaa as well from the weekend, Bradley, even Trent's still young. It is just a really exciting proposition. And as I say, that's credited to Klopp and Vítor Matos, Pep Linders and all of those at the club who've kind of put those foundations in place.
Yeah, definitely. And those young players might be needed again in the coming weeks. I mean, the games are coming thick and fast for Liverpool. They've got Southampton in the FA Cup in midweek. Nottingham Forest away on Saturday, which will be a really tough game as well. Then they've got Sparta Prague away in the Europa League, and of course that massive one against Manchester City at Anfield on the 10th of March. Jurgen Klopp today, sort of a mixed bag of injury news, really. I mean, Dominic Szoboszlai, Mohamed Salah, Darwin Nunez continued to be monitored ahead of that game against Southampton on Wednesday. Would you be tempted, if they are fit, to start them, or do you think it's a case of, you know, try and save them for the Premier League and whatever happens in the FA Cup happens?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because, I mean, it's a huge ask, isn't it, to kind of dust everyone down from the weekend. I mean, Klopp said earlier that they didn't train yesterday. It was only the really young lads, you know, probably some of the lads who didn't get on at the weekends, and the under-21s who trained yesterday. They'll have a session today, on Tuesday, of course, before Wednesday's game. But it will be a huge ask to kind of ask those lads, you know, 15, 16 of them who played at the weekend to kind of go again. I mean, it is Anfield, so you've got that, you know, advantage, if you like. But I just think for the sake of playing a Championship side, I would probably leave Salah, Szoboszlai. And I mean, I would involve them, of course, if they're, you know, fit enough to be on the bench. You don't know when you might need a match winner or something like that. But even just to get them to 15, 20 minutes at the end, and then you probably play them against Forest if you can, you know, half the game, whatever, 60 minutes. Again, you leave them out in the Europa League. I think you could probably patch up a team to kind of go to Sparta Prague and to get a decent result there. I mean, it's just all about getting them back fit for City, isn't it? Because, you know, that's going to be a game, I feel, that will decide the title, and just making sure that they're not thrown into that City game, you know, after 3 or 4 weeks out. You know, in Salah's case, a bit longer. It's about, you know, making sure that they are match sharp and they've got rhythm. So that is really important. So, you know, if they are about tomorrow to play, you know, sometime, fair enough. But I wouldn't be rushing them back at all. No, I don't think the reward is worth the risk, kind of thing.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that one. I mean, just finally then, obviously Liverpool have one trophy in the bag now, and we've spoken a lot, you know, on this podcast on Blood Red as well, about how this trophy can be used as a springboard to take Liverpool into the rest of the season. Do you think the quadruple is still on, or do you think Liverpool's injuries could be detrimental in the search for more trophies?
It's difficult, isn't it? I mean, I always think Liverpool are a better side when they're playing every 3 days. You know, we've seen that after international break, sometimes they struggle to get up to speed instantly. But I feel, you know, certainly going back to the 2 seasons ago when it was kind of Saturday, Tuesday, you know, Sunday, Wednesday kind of thing, I thought Liverpool were at their best, and they had a squad to kind of complement that and rotate across all competitions. I suppose the reassuring thing is that they haven't got a Champions League, you know, last 16 side. They're not playing Real Madrid. They're not playing, you know, a massive European side. You know, no disrespect to any Sparta Prague fans that might be listening to this podcast, but you would expect that Liverpool can make, you know, plenty of changes in both legs. And then you could even say again in the quarterfinal, should they get through. As I say, ask me after that City game, but I think at the moment they've got as good a chance as anyone, but it'd just be a real shame if they kind of got to 25, 26, 27 games and then these injuries are the other things that kill them. You'd rather them lose it, you know, by having a bad run or whatever. But, you know, if it's young lads who are playing him, you know, for the majority of the games for the next couple of weeks, that could prove, hopefully it doesn't prove costly, but if it does, I think it'll be a really disappointing way for it to kind of end. But I think at the moment, you know, the fancy the chances against Southampton. You win that, you're one game away from a Wembley semi-final in April, and the league, as I say, you know, you beat City, you're 4 points clear of them with what, 10 games to play. Mm-hmm. So well and truly on. I'll throw you the same question, Beth.
Yeah, I think injuries they're quite daunting at the moment, aren't they? And I think Liverpool certainly can't afford to lose anyone else. And we've seen a couple of times, haven't we, in the last few weeks, players have come back from injury and very quickly picked up knocks and niggles and been ruled out again. So I think when Darwin Nunez and Mohamed Salah and Dominic Szoboszlai come back, hopefully, touch wood, they stay fit. And they're able to really, you know, drive this team on towards the run-in and the end of the season. But fingers crossed, there'll be no more injuries. Liverpool will continue flying. They'll be propelled on by the Carabao Cup win. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks' time to dissect.
Just before the City game.
The City game, yeah. So to dissect a busy couple of weeks for the Reds. But for now, thank you very much for listening to Analyzing Anfield.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.